Thank you. Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. This is our regular meeting, March 21st, 2024. And we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. And may I have roll call, please, David?
Member Barnidge?
Here.
Member Rushing?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
I know, it's...
I'm here.
You can't see it.
Member Gibson?
Here.
It did.
Oh, there it is.
When it's red, it's kind of hard. You have to, like, turn to the side. We're getting new microphones soon.
So, Member Gibson, Member Hagman?
Here.
Member Tally? And Member Riley?
Here.
Okay, let's see. We will move on to item number two, which is public comment. So if there's anyone in the audience, and we'll go online. Well, do we go online? We don't for this meeting, right, David?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is recorded and then published after the fact.
Okay, so just in the audience, and I see someone there. So if you'd like to address the members on items that are not on this agenda at this time.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. And I'll also ask if you'll indulge me with a little bit of extra time. I know they normally hold these things at 3 minutes, but I suspect there's not a lot of people clamoring to speak right now. And so you have a talk in front of you that I prepared and sent to David. And my name is David Swift. I'm a licensed PE in California and a resident of Grover Beach. And I was looking at Lopez trying to help Councilman Rushing, but also help the community understand the driving need for drought-resilient water sources like CCB. And the reason I was looking at Lopez specifically is because at the end of the 22 drought, Lopez proactively cut their municipal deliveries by 20%. And that cut has been cited as kind of that, you know, that emergency come-to-Jesus moment that we need more water. And so I was trying to model the supply side via Lopez and groundwater and the demand side via projected future need in the city, and hoping that I could basically plot that model out and say, hey, there really is a need. We have extended droughts, and we have to fill that need somehow. What I sort of discovered in the process of looking at that data, and I'm going to jump ahead past, just for time's sake, past that second slide, specifically what I was looking at, and the third slide, which is the plot of Lopez that we're used to seeing. And thanks to David and his team, I got a lot of the Lopez historical data and was able to really cut through it. But I was looking at this plot in front of you and trying to correlate, you know, what were the cause and effects in that plot. And so on the next slide, you'll see an overlay of the mean rainfall during that period of time at Lopez compared to the fullness of Lopez. And again, what I'm hoping to do is correlate rainfall and drought to the availability of Lopez to inform that model. And on the slide after that, you'll see all the major events circled from kind of the beginning of Lopez to just before the current wet season was where my data ran. And if you'll notice, each of the little red circles correspond to a short or a long drought. And the big green circle in the middle corresponds to the really wet season in the 90s into early 2000. And, you know, sort of for our area, we average about 25 inches of rain per year, plus or minus about 20 inches of rain per year, but plus or minus about 25%. And then there are some big excursions where we see 40-inch years and 12-inch years. But on average, we're about 20 inches per year. I also looked at some 5-year and 10-year rolling averages, because when you do that, it gives you a feel for what the depth and the duration of the drought is. And the ones that, of course, jump out is the 1987 to 1994, and, of course, the 2015 to 2022, which were both very dry years. I then looked at that and said there's other things going on besides just the wet and dry, and there's got to be some additional stressors on the resource that you don't just see if you look at the rainfall data and the lake availability data. And so that next plot is just a plot of the downstream releases. Is a plot of the municipal diversions. And if you notice going into the 87 to 95 low year, the municipal diversions didn't taper off until halfway through that drought. And so the conservation leading into a drought was sort of midpoint before everyone said, hey, let's start conserving. And you can see that in the data, that that the municipal diversions ended up dropping off about halfway through. And that drop off was about 460 acre feet per month down to 360 acre feet per month. But the rainfall average over that period was only 17.4 inches. So while it was a drought, it wasn't a really hard, deep drought. And that showed up in the 5-year and 10-year averages also. But if you look at the lack of conservation halfway through and then a response, you can see that a lot of that big drawdown was drought coupled with delayed drought response or delayed conservation response. And so then if you move on to the wet year that followed that real dry spell, you'd say, well, it was a banner year, 25 inches per year over that period, very wet, and the lake should have recovered, but it didn't. And so what I overlaid with that one was the downstream releases to AG Creek, and you can see that the releases are very high compared to the period prior. In fact, prior it was about 207 acre feet per month. During the first part of that period, it got as high as 2,000 acre feet per month. And then post that period, it settled back down to an average of about 343 acre feet per month, 140 higher than it was going in. And initially, I just thought this was releases, and then I followed up with David, and he said, no, that was also preparation for the earthquake retrofit in 2005. So here we had a dry period in the 80s into the early 90s, followed by a wet period that should have recovered the resource but couldn't because the releases were high to prepare for the retrofit. And by the time the retrofit was done in 2005, the wet period is gone. And we're now heading and trending, you know, trending sort of normal to dry cycle again. And so we begin with dry, we missed our wet, we're going back into trending normal to dry again. And then if you go on to the next slide, you'll see that even into that normal trending dry period, the beginning of that period, we had about normal 19.7 inches per year. But as everyone knows, by the time we hit 22, we were down to, I think, around 12 inches per year. So a very long, deep, dry spell. And yet the releases to AG Creek in that period still remained high, on average, again, about 140 acre feet per month, higher than the previous average period. And so I would say that when you look at, you know, again, double stressors in that period, dry spell and higher than normal releases going into AG Creek. And so the lake still didn't recover. Now, for completeness on the next slide, I also wanted to look at whether we see any warming trends driving this to see if there's an additional stressor from warming, which basically shows up as evaporation on the lake. And I didn't see anything obvious jump out at that one. It looked like the evaporation, while it's a really big number, still sort of tracked lake size, temperature, relative humidity. You know, nothing jumped out as, oh my goodness, we have a trend that evaporation is getting significantly worse. And so I tried to draw some conclusions from this based just on looking at all of that data. And I'll say that my original look was, do we need water during extended drought periods? And I would say that if nothing changes with the way we operate the lake today, I would say yes. There's an obvious need that during those extended and deep drought periods, there will be a need for additional water. And I'm still working on getting that model completely clear to give to Mr. Rushing to communicate with people. But I would say that it's there. But what I also found is that throughout that record, we had several compounding, meaning, you know, drought and overdraw, and several competing, high rainfall but high discharges, that basically skew that plot that we all look at to say that the lake is trending in a bad direction. In reality, it was a bunch of these sort of compounding and competing things that led up to where we are today. And that some of those stressors are gone, the retrofit's done. There's a lot of conservation that's very clear in the data. And the only one that I could see that still remained was what was happening with AG Creek. Is that, you know, is there a way to go back to AG Creek and reduce that discharge a little bit to get it back closer to what it was pre-wet period in the 80s? And so I kind of came away with some recommendations. I found two guiding documents when looking at all this. One of them is the Little Reservoir Release Plan. And the problem I saw in that one is that it really doesn't kick in until the lake's in trouble, right? You don't do anything until you get below 20,000 acre feet, and by that point, you're kind of late. Whereas if you had some kind of predictive modeling, and again, I think there's some data there, and David and I talked about this earlier, you would be able to apply a different adaptive management strategy to to sort of preempt some of these problems, like we saw back in the 80s. You don't conserve 4 years into the drought. You conserve in year one based on some modeling thing. And so I think there's an opportunity to do some better predictive modeling, given the data that's available and things that you could look at in the future. The other one was the habitat conservation plan. As I dug into what was driving the AG Creek releases, I found out that the HCP isn't released. It was drafted in 2007 timeframe. An interim plan came into effect in 2007, but the formal HCP has not been released even today. And so I think that should be done, because that's a big piece of what drives AG Creek. But the other piece of that is in the LRRP, there is an opportunity to reduce discharges to AG Creek significantly. Chapter 3.5.1 talks about reducing it down to, I think it's 3 cubic feet per second. And so it's permissible, although it's not being done. And when you look at what that means to the overall water, just in changing the way the releases are done in AG Creek, on the last page, there is, you know, 100 plus acre feet per month, I would say, available in AG Creek when you compare to the earlier averages. That equates to enough water for 15,000 people. And so, you know, I think probably my strongest recommendation out of this is to really go back and look at that, you know, that piece and see if there is anything to tap into there to reduce that stressor on the lake during dry spells. But then also, you know, really go back and look at the modeling going into the adaptive management strategy to see if there's new tools, new modeling techniques, new predictive rainfall models from NOAA that might help inform how you would manage that going forward, given that, again, those stressors from the past, two of the big ones are gone. And so what are the stressors going into the future that we're competing with during those dry spells? That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. It's appreciated, and the hard copies as well. And I would just ask, David, when is the next TAC meeting?
The TAC meetings are held second Wednesday of every month.
Okay. So would you be able to share this with the TAC?
Yeah.
Electronically or in person? Because
yeah,
I'd love for Shane to take a look at it. And also, I just, Mr. Swift, are you attending our Central Coast Blue meetings, or have you been?
Yes, I have been.
Okay.
And that was actually what one of the things that triggered me looking into this, again, was trying to communicate the need end of that conversation. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Great. I'm glad you're doing that. Thank you very much for your input. Okay. Back to my paper copy.
Yeah, I would just
sure go ahead.
That. Just thank you for the look at the data and you know, your analysis. Obviously, spent quite a bit of time on it, and I think it some interesting takeaways. I kind of have two hats. I'm on the TAC as well, so I think the TAC would be interested in doing that. And some of the other modeling. And then the downstream releases, I think you hit it. That's one that, frankly, we're not sure if we want the answer from the folks or from Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife on what they would like to see with downstream releases. But that is in the – we talk about it almost every month in terms of the status of that for our fear of them saying release more water instead of less. And so we have to be careful what we ask for there. But great points, good analysis. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can comment on, you know, the HCP is in progress. I've been in multiple meetings, just nothing to share quite yet. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. It will be looking at an adaptive management strategy as far as the downstream release goes. So depending on what the lake's level is and what the rainfall is looking like that year, we would characterize the lake as either dry, normal, or wet, and then that would dictate our downstream release. We haven't kind of narrowed down what those release rates would be. Obviously, we're trying to stick within the safe yield of the reservoir and what those releases look like. But as you guys all know, working with some of the state regulators or even the federal regulators, it's kind of a little bit of a give and take, and we're working towards it. And as soon as I have something to share with the group, the TAC as well as the AC, I'll be doing that. We're just not quite at that point yet. So.
Any other comments or right now or questions for staff regarding the presentation?
I'll just say thank you, Mr. Swift, for coming out. I know we've had a few conversations leading into this as well. And if memory serves, too, we have a brief section in our budget that we're talking about today regarding the HCP as well, correct? The change of its designation, possibly?
That was the contractor designated okay. reserves.
Okay.
I can speak to that a little bit later. It actually had to do with the Central Coast Blue project. Yeah. We can
perfect.
Kind of
thank
discuss
you.
That. Yeah.
And then just a quick question, David, or maybe Brad as well, just from being on the TAC. I would imagine that the farmers would have some input regarding the downstream releases because that affects them.
They do, and typically the way we've operated the downstream release is I put out a spreadsheet to the farmers, and I get their feedback on when they would like releases and what those releases mm-hmm. should look like, mm-hmm. and then I compare that to historical releases as well to see if it's in line with how we normally release, if it's outside those releases. Fortunately for us, the ag use has really kind of coincided with what like fish and wildlife in them would mm-hmm. like to see. So fortunately for us, they kind of go hand in hand when it's, you know, yeah, it just worked out that way. So,
okay.
But yes, they definitely have a hand in the process.
Okay. So. All righty. So public comment is still open. Anyone else from the audience would like to come forward and speak on items that are not on the agenda at this time? Please come forward. Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the committee, and we'll move on to the meeting minutes. Did anyone have any changes, or if not, I'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Roll call vote, please, David.
Sure thing. Member Barnett?
Yes.
Member Rushing?
Yes.
Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Member Gibson?
Yes.
Member Hageman?
Yes.
And Member Riley?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. Moving on to the operations report, A, B, and C. David, is this all you?
Yeah, so okay. I'll go ahead and start with A. I have just a verbal update for you. So the plant, water treatment plant, is currently offline. We're doing the chemical tank replacement right now, so the water treatment plant is off. State water is at 3.9 MGD. Our downstream release is at 2.3 MGD. The reservoir capacity is currently at 100.3%. Storage volume is 49,526.6 acre feet. That elevation would be 522.75 feet. Our spillway flow is currently at 21.2 CFS, and rainfall to date is 21.33 inches. Any questions on the data?
Can I ask maybe a dumb question?
Sure.
How is it above 100% full?
The spillway crest is considered 100%, and okay. then anything going over that makes it go above 100%.
Okay.
And that's why the spillway flow is currently at 21.2 CFS.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All righty. Any yeah. other questions, comments on that? Okay.
All right.
Let's see. Next, B.
Yeah, item B. So up on the screen here is the reservoir projections. As you know, this is always a month behind. So currently we're sitting at the 100%. And if you notice the red line, that's our storage projection based on municipal deliveries and no more rainfall over the next few months. Or it includes some of the little blue rainfall checks at the bottom, but that shows minimal rain in the near future. So that's if municipal and downstream deliveries go as historically over the last 3 to 5 years, that's where we would be. So looks like by the end of December 2024, we'd be sitting somewhere around, what is that, about 44,000 acre feet. So.
Okay, any questions from the committee?
And then go to the monthly ops report. Usually I don't run through this too much. Hopefully you guys have taken a look at it. And if you have any questions on your usage, just let me know. But everything's seeming like it's just kind of moving forward like it normally does. Usage is looking good. So,
questions? Nope. Okay. All righty then. We will move on to item number 5, which is information items, presenting the fiscal year 2023-23 budget status, attachment 4 in the packet.
Yeah, sure thing. And that's me. I don't think my finance person is here today. So I'll run through this. So we're in our second quarter. We've spent 36% of the overall budget to date. 55% of the routine O&M has been spent to date. Let's see. Our non-routine is sitting currently at 14%, and our capital outlay is currently at 6% spent to date. I was hoping there's some graphs in here. Our routine O&M is, as you can see, we're tracking pretty well with our budget. We've had some, you know, water treatment, you know, costs kind of up front this year, and so that's kind of why we're kind of ticking up a little bit, but we're hoping to see that come back in line with what the actual budget is. Our non-routine O&M, that's tracking a little low. As a few of these projects start to wrap up, like the seismic alternatives and geotech investigation on the terminal, that should start to catch up. We have a huge budget in cloud seeding, obviously, that we're not going to spend now. So that's kind of holding this graph a little low. Our spillway physical investigation, we finally got approval with DSOD for the work plan. So we have a little bit more back and forth with DSOD over that, but that line item, I think there's, where are we sitting right now, about $358,000 available in that one. That one should start to really catch up as we start doing the work up on the spillway. So I know I've said this in the past, but I really do expect these graphs to start to converge a little bit as we spend some of the money. So, let's go to the next one. Capital outlay, that one's sitting pretty low. As you guys know, we're trying to replace the fire flow tank, so I'm trying to build up that budget. So that's money that's not going to get spent until I have approximately, you know, $900,000 or $1 million in there. We do have an opportunity potentially for ARPA funds for that one. I won't know until probably July if funds are available. So at that time, I might come back to the group here to ask for maybe borrowing against reserves to fully fund the project at this time instead of trying to push it out over time, because you guys would potentially be getting free money. So it's like, yeah. So I might have to borrow a little more from you if the ARPA won't cover all of it. So, but I'll bring that back as I have more information. Then the cathodic protection, that's almost fully complete. So that $480,000 that's available, we should see the check's getting written here pretty quick, and so that line will jump up. So
I just can say, remind us again what ARPA funds are.
That was the American Recovery Protection Rescue Act. So the county got funds. I know the agencies got funds. The county obviously was looking at all the county facilities first. But if we don't use the money in time, then we lose the money. So our plan is to make sure we don't lose the money. And if there's money available, we hope to, we're trying to get these projects shovel ready, especially the fire flow tank. And so in the event that there's money available, we can allocate it to that.
Any other questions? Okay. We will move on to the capital projects update. Item number 6.
All right. So fire flow tank replacement, our geotech's complete. We're working on 90% design plans. Like I said, we're just trying to get that shovel ready, and then we'll know by June or July whether or not we have ARPA funds and whether or not we need additional funding for that to complete it this year or next year, I should say. And then the membrane module replacement, we're just waiting on delivery of the modules. We actually postponed delivery because of the chemical tank replacement. There's just a lot going on site, and the last thing we wanted was to have to try to jockey around 128 modules at the same time. So that one, they are bought, they are paid for, just waiting on delivery. Spillway assessment, same thing. Finalize the work plan with DSOD, and we'll start scheduling some of that work, like GPR testing, which is ground penetrating radar, looking at rebar, doing some concrete coring, that sort of thing. So we'll start scheduling that work once we finalize all the back and forth with DSOD. The geotechnical testing at the terminal reservoir, that is pretty much all wrapped up. We're just waiting on the consultant to finalize the seismic report for that one. So when that's available, I'll let you guys know and make it available to you as well. Cathodic protection repair project, all the construction work is complete. We're just waiting on our consultant to show up and start doing startup and testing of that project. The chemical tank replacement, that's ongoing right now. We're expecting it to be completed by the 28th, and then we will turn the plant back on at that point. The sludge bed curtain wall, we still have a leak on that. We're getting additional quotes, but we have a plan in place for the repair and can finally get, we needed multiple quotes to get that one going. And but it should still be in line with a $50,000 budget for that one. And then the DAF building, I think I brought this up in the past, but it was an unbudgeted project. We noticed some rust damage on multiple girders within the DAF building. And so we're looking at repairing and replacing that. And I believe we moved $95,000. I'm trying to remember where we moved that money from. But that's the approximate. And maybe I still need to move money, and I'll come back to ask for that at a different time. But we should have some savings in some of the other projects, maybe even the cathodic protection one. So I'll come back at a later time to ask to move some budget around for that one. So,
What does DAF stand for?
It's dissolved air flotation. So we actually float all the junk out of the water using microbubbles. And a lot of places have settlement ones where it all sinks to the bottom. We actually float it to the surface, and then we scrape it all off. So it catches the chemicals like alum and some of the other coagulants that are at the front end of the process. So we coagulate it all, get it all clumpy, and then we raise it to the surface and scrape it off.
And so it goes into a building?
So the DAF unit is inside a building.
Okay.
So there's two huge little reservoirs inside this one building, and it's got a roof over it, and those it stays pretty wet in there because there's misters to rinse down all the sludge and stuff like that. And even though they're a galvalume-coated truss, they've just rusted over time. So we're looking at alternatives and what other coatings could be used in that because of that kind of acidic environment, so or corrosive environment. So, and that's why it's taking a little more time. We're not just going to go slap a Band-Aid on it. We'd like to make sure it gets fixed and lasts. So,
well, how old is that? Is the product?
So that
the building.
Let's see. It was the upgrade was done in 07, and I think the building went on in 08.
Okay.
So, because it was actually an uncover. Well, it's a long story, but there used to just be a cover over it, and then we realized that you couldn't maintain it in any way at that point, so they put a building over it. So that building's roughly, 15, 16 years old.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions on the projects update?
Yeah, actually, just one. Came up in my brain when we were talking about things rising and falling. We talked in the past about sediment in the lake, and that we had future plans for actually doing an assessment of what the sediment is in the lake. I wanted to see where we are in that so we can get an accurate idea of what happened there.
Yeah, 100%. So I actually have it under here under completed projects, the bathymetric study. It is complete. We ended up doing a little addendum to get additional data above the water line, and our consultant just wrapped that up this week. So I'll put it on my notes. I'll bring it back at the next AC. If I recall, the sediment buildup was really, really low. If I recall, it was like under 5% or something like that from the last one that was done 20 years ago. So it was looking really good. But I'll bring that back to you guys so you can actually look at the data.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, and then Brad, sorry. Yes. So we don't usually have anyone here to comment. So I guess you should open every single item up, which we've never done because there's never anyone here. But I'll go ahead and just open it up for any item on the agenda, public comments. Is there anyone like to speak? And then we'll continue.
Thank you so much, Chair Barnidge. I'm Debbie Peterson from Grover Beach. I very briefly was on the Zone 3 board, former mayor, planning commissioner, and council member. And I just have one question. I thought maybe it was the last item, but actually I think it's this one. And I believe that there have been no current cost-benefit studies of raising the spillway. And so not necessarily asking for an answer to the question, but I'm just wondering if there have been any studies of the cost-benefits since, I believe, 2016 was the last one done. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else from the public, from the audience? Okay, we'll go ahead and close public comment. And is there any brief information you want to provide regarding that question, David?
Yeah, the only thing I can say is you are correct. I don't think there's been any look at it since the study that you mentioned. And I can look into our file, see if anything else was done. I know that at the time it was somewhat cost prohibitive because of the bridge that goes over the spillway needed to be raised. And that posed some really hard challenges with the dam itself and the road leading up to it. But let me take a look. I'll see if there's any other studies that were done.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, David. Okay. Let's get back on track here. So we are moving on. We have no action items this morning that where the subsequent Board of Supervisors action is not required. We do have an action item where the Board of Supervisors action is required, which is the fiscal year 2024-25 budget endorsement. So we'll go ahead and go to staff for a presentation of that.
Yeah, so I didn't include in your packet because it's so long there. And I know there were some questions from some of your guys' finance staff about this, and then it was brought up at the Zone 3 TAC about making some more money somewhat available, and I know it had to do with the Central Coast Blue project. So if you, I know I sent out this budget, I think, for last month's meeting, and the only change that you would see in this one would be the easiest way for us to kind of free up to that cash flow that was recommended was in the contractors, reserves, and capital outlay. Let me find the page. So you'll notice down here these red items. So these...
the green item?
Let's see.
Sorry, what do you mean?
So the red, can you see my cursor? Right. Oh, that's funny. It doesn't show up as red.
Okay.
It's red on my screen.
Okay.
This last line right here before the sums. So we have agency-funded reserves for future and equipment capital replacement. And it's a percentage of the overall, and that you guys pay into that every year. And so the TAC brought it up to our attention that if we could free up somewhere around $250,000, that would be helpful for all the agencies. So this was our easiest way of doing that, was to not fund the agency-funded reserves so that it would lower your overall, each agency's overall billings for this next fiscal year by the, and then this column, these right here, this is each agency's number. So, like, AG is $143,000, and then it walks across, and yeah, and then Grover and Pismo. So that's the only change between this one and the last one that I gave you guys. So for the endorsement, I would need to know, I heard that CCB had been paused the other day, and do you still want us to go down this route of... holding off on these agency-funded reserves. Yeah, not funding the reserves.
Yeah, not billing the agencies for agency funding.
Yeah, and the plan was, and we discussed this at the TAC, is we are sitting on money from the cloud seeding project. It's been discussed that we won't be cloud seeding for a number of years because the reservoir is so full. And I believe there's somewhere around $450,000 in there. So the plan was we won't bill you right now, free up this cash flow, and then... but we would still like our reserves replenished. So once the budget wrapped up, we would take the money out of the cloud seeding project and put the money back in your reserves. Mm-hmm. So your billings still remain low, but we will put the money back into put the money into reserves that needs to be there. So.
And there won't. I know we talked about the potential for like a catch up, but in this case, since we didn't spend it on cloud seeding, or we don't anticipate,
exactly,
we really wouldn't need additional billings as well.
It's not like the fire flow tank. It's not like any of these other capital projects where I'm asking for more money. We didn't have to take anything from what our ask is. So,
seems to make good sense and good place. Yeah.
So, I can walk through the budget overall. I don't know if you guys have all. Taking a look at this or have any specific questions on it?
Well, I just want to go back to the change from for CCB.
Yeah.
I didn't hear anything different from my city manager or my admin services director.
Okay.
So all I would be going on is the last information you have from the TAC.
Yeah.
So the way I understand, I chaired the meeting for Central Coast Blue, and it's being paused. Breaking ground was supposed to start in summer of this year. They're anticipating definitely not for the next year, if even that. because of cost escalation, et cetera. So, but I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if any other the agencies, Grover and Pismo, know the answer to that question from their agencies about what David's asking. No.
So I'm usually contacted prior to this meeting with any specific questions or requests, and I wasn't. So I'm assuming that we are, the city of Pismo's on board with this.
Okay. I would echo that statement as well. I would say that knowing going in that we do have the funds available to replenish the reserves and moving forward, I'm sure that all of the cities would appreciate a lower bill regardless of where we're standing at this point. So with that in mind, I would be in support of this.
Okay, then moving on to the rest of the budget that wasn't changed, but that we received prior to the last meeting. Does anyone have any questions or comments? No, I keep forgetting about Shirley.
No.
Hi, Shirley. Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and open this up to public comment. If there's anyone from the audience that would like to come forward. Seeing no one, then I will close public comment, bring it back to the committee, and look for a motion.
Just to approve the budget?
Mm-hmm. Now it's on.
I move we approve the budget.
Second.
Or do we have to say the 20?
Fiscal year 24-25 budget?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion and we have a second. Do we have any discussion on this?
No, ma'am.
All right.
Just for clarification,
yes.
As amended, as Dave has suggested.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. Okay, then I'll go ahead and do we want a voice vote or roll call?
I can do a roll call vote.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you, David.
Yep. Member Barnidge?
Yes.
Member Rushing?
Yes.
Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Member Gibson?
Yes.
Member Hageman?
Yes.
Member Riley?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. That takes us to future agenda items. Is there anyone from the board that has anything they would like to see on a future agenda?
I would definitely, after the tax had a chance to talk about Mr. Swift's comments, I would love to have that agendized for an update on that as well, please.
And I have one that we always hear from John Wallace about is on the solar and, are we actually, or what is our realized, I think that'd be interesting for the committee. We got the county, I guess we got a very nice grant for the battery backup packs. I think it was on the order of $500,000, $400,000.
Yeah, it was quite a bit.
Yeah, quite a bit of money on that. And then it was slow getting installed and operational, but I think we are now operational or not.
We're halfway there.
Halfway there. It's been.
We're still waiting for an infrastructure upgrade by PG&E,
to
fully utilize the system as it's intended.
Yeah.
But we are currently doing peak shaving with it, so we're knocking down those really expensive pump starts and things.
Getting out of 30 cents a kilowatt hour range. Yeah.
So, but it's my understanding there's still some transformer that needs replaced before we can fully utilize it how it's meant to be utilized.
And I guess the cynics in us would say PG&E's dragging their feet because we're going to save money, but that's just the cynic.
Go ahead, Shirley.
I don't know if this needs to be on the agenda, but I'd like more information about PFAS in our water.
Oh, okay. So, and I can comment on the state actually just issued, they've looked at different water sources and has essentially mandated certain water sources to go test. So a couple of our CSAs have been mandated to do that. We have not seen anything for the reservoirs. It's mostly just groundwater.
Okay. And just for the public, if they watch this later, someone give me the acronym, the words that go behind? I think I know half of it, but I'm not going
to
even attempt it.
I'll have to Google
it. Oh, you got to Google it?
Okay. It's polyfluoral. Oh, I'm going to murder that. It's in here somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can probably find it. I know
microfibers or.
I have the order from the state. Polyfluoral alkyl substances.
Okay.
Why can't you remember that?
Right? Well, that was not what I was thinking, by the way. So glad I didn't attempt that. Okay. Thank you for that, Shirley. And then on to committee member comments. I would just say that I really appreciate Mr. Swift's information, and I can't wait to sort of hear what Mr. Shane Taylor, the water guru for our city, thinks. He's probably got an opinion, though. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah. I'm going to hear about it. So anyway, any other comments? Okay, short and sweet, 11:11. Adjournment.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.